Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan, and today we are discussing a deep division plaguing the vegan movement. Way back then, I remember how Israel was looked at very favorably by vegans. One media outlet called it the global center of veganism. Online, I remember the many popular videos of Gary Yourofsky being interviewed on Israeli TV, always with Hebrew subtitles. But since October of last year, since the brutal attacks and kidnappings perpetrated by Hamas, and then the violent retaliation of Israel, something shifted in the vegan movement. And I witnessed internal conflict, not about how effective activism should be done, think about welfareism versus abolitionism, but about the Gaza war. And when I witnessed Jewish vegan activists leaving the community in droves, erasing even their social media presence, I knew that this represented the breaking point for the cause. To discuss this topic, I have with me four brilliant Jewish vegan activists. Donny Moss, who is behind the popular animal rights online news magazine, Der Turn, Mira Jaser, founder of the Jewish animal rights organization Tikva for Animals, Bobby Sud, a distinguished filmmaker and photographer who has collaborated with notable figures such as Sean Mawson, Generation Vegan and musician Mobby, and Shani Cohen, successful vegan entrepreneur behind Shani Seasoning and Urban Leaf Catering. I like to always ask the question, who is your vegan hero and why? I feel like it always, you know, allows to reveal who you are in the space of veganism, what your perspective is. So who'd like to start? Yes, Mira.
Hi, I'm Mira Geiser. I would say my vegan hero is not a specific person necessarily. It's more just kind of the mindset that certain people have and just wanting to be as effective as possible. And it not, you know, if they don't see the results that they'd like to see, they're willing to kind of shift their perspective and try new things and not necessarily be stuck in their ego of what they're more experienced in, maybe if they're not seeing the results they want. But I would want to give a shout out to my mom, who, despite being very empathetic and really feeling what animals go through, she's gone to some awful places with me to get footage. And it would not have been possible without her driving me there. So yeah, I'm really thankful for that.
Thank you, Mira. What about you, Donny?
So in 2004, I stumbled upon a veg fest in my neighborhood and left with a DVD, Meet Your Meat. And that was the start of my, that was a documentary film that takes viewers behind the scenes of factory farms and slaughterhouses. And that was the start of my vegan journey and my journey as an animal rights activist. And I've loved PETA ever since. I would say my vegan hero is Jane Velez Mitchell, the former CNN anchor, who is now a full-time animal rights sort of campaigner, vegan campaigner, with who created the vegan app Unchained TV.
Thank you, Donny. Shani?
Hi, I'm Shani Cohen. I live in Vancouver, Canada, and I went vegan in 2013. After watching, and it's funny that you mentioned that Gary Yourofsky famous speech, I am a Gary Yourofsky vegan. And ever since then, I truly have been looking up to him. His unapologetic stance on veganism is something that always moves me through all these years in activism and in life. And so, yeah, I truly appreciate him. He's the one that gave me that push to open my eyes and join the movement. So,
thank you, Shani, and the fellow Canadian. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, I'm Bobby. I'm in Austin, Texas. I'm an animal rights photojournalist. I guess my vegan hero would be my twin brother, who, after attempting suicide, went to rehab and went vegan day one. And says that that's what really saved his life, was adopting a vegan lifestyle. And he's the one who convinced me to become vegan. So he's definitely my hero, yeah.
Thank you, Bobby. Okay, so Let me start with this question. In the introduction, I talked about Jewish vegan activists leaving the movement. Is that factual? Did that really happen? Who wants to take that? Yes, Tony.
So just today, I received an email from a woman who I have never met before, who said, I'm going to read it. Hi, Donnie. I've been an animal advocate and vegan for years. I pulled back from many vegan and animal activist groups after 10/7. I thank you for your posts and have requested your friendship. I've gotten probably 20 emails like that since 10/7. But I could also tell you that as an organizer in New York City, the number of vegan Jewish animal rights activists who participate in events has dropped precipitously. We've lost organizers. We've lost people who just show up and participate. And so, the loss has been pretty profound and sad.
Mira?
So it's interesting. I might have a different perspective than a lot of other vegan Jews, not necessarily everybody, but I started noticing a problem in 2020 during COVID. More people were home, you know, in quarantine. So they were online and they were posting more about their thoughts. And that's when I started seeing things blaming Jews for COVID, which was very reminiscent of, you know, Jews being blamed for the Black Plague. And I think I started speaking out around then. I know I was interviewed for an article when James Aspie started talking about the animal Holocaust, and that was beginning of 2021. And the person was just reaching out to people who had been posting, Jews who had been posting. So I definitely started seeing an issue then, but I think at that point it was certain pockets of the vegan community or the animal rights movement. So if you weren't in those specific spaces, you didn't necessarily see it. But just over time, I saw it get more obvious and also kind of spread throughout the community where it wasn't just like sporadic random scenarios. And it got to a point where the space I was in, I did not feel safe being in. And also, especially when you're doing activism that's more high risk, where you're working with other people and you need to make sure that you trust each other, especially safety, that you have one another's backs. It just wasn't possible, knowing what they thought about Jews and what they were saying about Jews. And again, this is way before 2023. And so it got to a point where I was kind of at a crossroads where I didn't want to stop advocating for animals, but I didn't really know where to go. There are certain approaches to help animals that I find I'm more effective with and you know, maybe come more naturally. And I just didn't see any of those spaces being welcoming to me. And so it got to a point where I thought maybe I would create my own thing, but I didn't feel knowledgeable enough and experienced enough. But I did notice there was a gap in the Jewish community and Israel as a country in terms of maybe things that, like approaches that weren't being filled. There was a lot of like vegan food advocacy and stuff like that, but there was less so maybe systematic stuff, abolitionist stuff. So I thought maybe I could fill in that gap. And just over time, I saw more and more vegan Jews basically say, like, I see it now, and I'm willing to join you because I feel like there's no other option. And there were people, especially after October 7th, 2023, that I thought would never leave the spaces they were in, that are not only leaving those spaces, but some of them are completely done and honestly so traumatized, they're not lending their expertise or experience to the community at all. And again, these are people that have been instrumental for a variety of things in the activist community that I never would have seen coming. I think that there is a disproportionate, in a positive way, amount of Jews across the globe that are involved in the activist community, considering how small of a percentage we are population-wise. I think it's like 0.2 or 0.2% of the world population, and we're involved in all facets of the activist community, whether that's lawyers helping out in activist or animal rights cases, rescuers, investigators, organizers, protesters. And yeah, just seeing very few Jews actively involved in the larger community compared to where I was in 2020.
Bobby?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what we mean by leaving the movement. I organized the vigils in LA for 6 years, and I did a lot of street activism. And I'm not going to be doing street activism anymore. I was starting to clash with approaches to activism and effective communication that I was seeing on the streets. And then after October 7th was kind of just the push that I needed to just be like, I'm not going to be doing this anymore. However, I can't say that I've left the movement. I'm still an animal rights photojournalist. My photos are going to be on exhibit at Tel Aviv University in May. They're in an art magazine in Japan that was just published. So I'm still doing that. I'm just not out on the street, so you won't see me active. You might say he left, but I haven't left. I'm just changing my approach.
Shani.
I can only, I don't know about Jews in general, but I can speak for myself and my Jewish friends in the community here in Vancouver. And I definitely can tell that we are choosing not to participate in events, outreach, because of we just feel ostracized and just that feeling of being unwelcome in the movement just has caused us to kind of like do our own thing within ourselves, which is just weakens the movement altogether because our power is in numbers when we do outreach, when we do protests, and to alienate that part of, and like Mary said, like Jews are essential in any human right fight that we had over the years, if it's the fight, BLM is part of it, the animal rights movement, all of this stuff. And so we just don't feel welcome anymore. And so then choosing not to participate, and yeah, definitely it's something that has been happening since October 7 and the explosion of anti-Semitism in the movement.
Well, I guess naturally, my second question is, what caused that, departure from the movement? And Mira, you alluded to that. Now, Shani, you've named it explicitly. So why are Jewish activists not feeling safe, not feeling welcome? What's happening, Donnie?
Well, I mean, it really started right after October 7th when you would nor you know, after that massacre where 1,200 people in Israel were literally burned in their homes, raped, murdered, kidnapped. I mean, an additional 250 kidnapped. The typical expressions of support that we're accustomed to seeing, we just, the victims of that, of those atrocities weren't afforded those, words of compassion and sympathy. And it was just, and what is that? Why is that? But it became sort of, it got dark very quickly, long before Israel even responded militarily. Instead of reaching out to Jewish people in the community, people started to post that this was an act of resistance, that this was justified, that this was exaggerated, that Israel did this to itself. That, I mean, all, it, the mental gymnastics employed to not just say what it was, a horrific terrorist attack against innocent civilians, including children and families and kids dancing at a festival, it became sort of odious, hateful right away. And then shortly thereafter, the accusations of genocide and colonialism and apartheid and an ethnostate. And I mean, these were activists with whom I've been working in the streets for, in some cases, 20 years. Not once in my career, well, I shouldn't call it a career because I'm a volunteer, but not once in my life as an animal rights activist did any of these people even talk about Israel or Zionism. The fact that I was Jewish was irrelevant. And then all of a sudden, people's identities, they sort of transform their identities into anti-Zionists. Where did that come from? And many of them sort of secretly admitted that they didn't know anything about the issue or the region. They were just jumping on this bandwagon, and it was just anti-Semitism. That's the one of the things that struck me, and then I'll turn it over to somebody else, was that, not long after Israel began to defend itself and try to get the hostages back, three animal rights organizations who had never commented on geopolitical issues and were really focused on animal rights made inflammatory posts falsely accusing Israel of genocide. And thousands upon thousands of animal rights activists in the movement who've maybe never given the Middle East conflict any thought, who didn't know anything about it, the region, were then seeing that these groups that they supported and were members of and respected were accusing Israel of genocide, which is not what happened at all. So I think that that really pushed things forward in terms of alienating Jews from the movement. I started to say earlier that, I'm an organizer in New York City. I used to get, I could easily get 40 or 50 people to come out to a protest. Now I not only have Jewish activists who aren't coming out anymore in many cases, but I also have activists who don't come out because I'm Jewish. And so this is really hurting not just Jewish activists, but the animals for whom we all should be fighting. And to make matters even more worse or complicated is that many of the people who are alienating us and attacking us aren't really even active in the movement. So they're sabotaging, they've almost co-opted the movement to and are sabotaging it at the expense of animals.
Bobby?
I think that there's a few factors involved in with what happened, and I think that if we're honest with ourselves, we can admit how much intolerance is in the vegan animal rights community. I mean, vegan activists and animal rights activists are intolerant. I can't tell you how many times I've heard them say, "Well, I'm not going home to my parents. They're monsters. They're not vegan." They have this binary view of the world after becoming vegan that if vegan, you're good, and if you're not, you're bad. And so if you're not, then you're not welcome. And you combine that with this new approach to fact checking, which is just how I feel about something is enough. And you combine that with the fact that we don't put one and one together anymore to get two on our own. We turn and look to the crowd, and the crowd is the loudest voice. I think that those had a lot to do with what happened. And vegans, it was weird because it was surprising and not as surprising as I would expect at the same time, because I have found animal rights groups to be incredibly angry and intolerant, and it's like, well, par for the course, I guess. But what was difficult was with groups that I'd worked with for 10 years, organizations. On October 8th, I put up a post on my Instagram page saying I stand with Israel, and all of them called me and told me to take it down. And I was like, well, hang on a second, because we as an organization, we stood up for George Floyd, we stood up for Ukraine, we stood up for the shootings at gay bars in Orlando, we stood up for all these things. But now, because it's a Jewish problem, we're just going to say, well, it's too complicated. We're going to stay away from this one, while at the same time using words like genocide in their posts on their face on their websites. So I think that the problem is that people have because of things like cancel culture, have become scared with saying what's right versus what's popular, because most of people's lives exist on social media, and that life can be taken away so easily with someone just saying, we need to cancel this person.
Mira?
So I think, what happens in the animal rights movement in terms of views of things can often be a microcosm of the larger world. The surge of anti-Semitism was not just in the vegan community. It's been an issue worldwide. In some places, the statistics of anti-Semitic events has been as high as it has been basically since the Holocaust, depending on the location, or as early as it started to be tracked basically by certain organizations. And I think, then you're bound to get, some of those people that are in the vegan community to have those opinions as well. But I will say, I've basically never seen any accountability in the animal rights community for xenophobia towards Israelis and just anti-Semitism towards the Jews in the community. I will say there was one instance where someone, again, this was way before October 7th, 2023, one person had made a like just blatantly stereotyped, non-factual comment about Jews, and I had called this statement out, and another friend had talked to them, and they reached out to me. But in terms of like organizations, especially after October 7th, having any accountability for their organizers or people involved, I have seen none. And if anything, these people are continuing to be platformed more and more. And I'm talking about people that are blatantly supporting the kidnapping of people that are trying to justify why it's okay to take hostages, why Hamas was doing something good, why Hezbollah was doing something good. I mean, some of these people have, I don't know, close to 100,000 followers in the community, and then they're sharing that stuff, and they're not getting any repercussions for that. And then there's me and my friends, none of us who have a significant amount of followers, trying to say anything, and it's really just not getting anywhere. And kind of like what Bobby said, that they're just people just have the choice of either being in a very hostile environment where not even everyone wants to work with us, but then they end up just resigning from positions they're in. And yeah, I mean, it got to a point where I was trying to keep track of different statements made, and I've just run out of storage on my phone from all the screenshots of things being said. And it's basically most major organizations in the community I've seen have said awful stuff or knew about awful stuff, and were trying to justify it and just ignore it. And that's where I find it to be very problematic, because like, what hope of recourse is there if everyone's either going to ignore it or tolerate it?
This is very interesting because something I found sinister about this all is how, like you said, there was no media coverage. Nobody is talking about it. There's this huge shift in the vegan movement, the vegan community, and it just goes unnoticed, except for a few influencers here and there, raising their voice. Against those positions, and against anti-Semitism, I waited. Like, who is going to cover this story? Why is nobody talking about it? So I don't know if you have an answer for that, but yes, Shani.
Sorry, I was muted. I just wanted to answer to your previous question. Why don't we feel safe? And I agree with what everyone were talking about. I really felt it because I've lived everything that you guys just said. And for me, it was even more personal when in the first, I think, week or two after the October 7 attacks, the Vancouver Jewish, Vancouver vegan community has really rallied up and started to make lists of businesses that were put in on some sort of like a blacklist of do not support these genocidal Zionist businesses. And I was among them. And to reiterate what Mira said, like these are accounts with thousands and hundreds of thousands of followers sometimes. And the impact of that was just unimaginable. Like it's to be put on a list, kind of like throws you back to really dark times in our history. And that's alongside with all the posts and DMs that people have been sending me. So I just to reiterate what everyone said. So yeah, just personally, my business was alienated, was put on a list not to support in the local community. So that was a main event that made me feel unsafe in this community in particular, and in the vast community in general. And to your question, why nobody's talking about it? I can't tell. Like it feels like you say, there's the cancel culture that we're all been marinated in for years, not only in this subject, but in other subjects as well. And I don't know, it feels like there's like the vegan community as a whole is part of this like more general and larger human rights movement and progressive movement. So naturally, these people took the stance of supporting Hamas and absolutely ignoring the suffering of the Jewish people and after, especially after the massacre in Israel. And it just became, just like the people before me said, they jumped on the bandwagon. Nobody, it doesn't feel like anyone has truly critical, nuanced conversation about what is happening in Israel, using slogans like genocide, apartheid, ethnostate. It's fashion. It feels like just fashion. Nobody really stops to talk about this and all the complicity around it in a, yeah, in a matter that will give space to everyone, because there are legitimate grievances to the Palestinian population who lives in and outside of Israel, in Gaza and Judea and Samaria. There is a legitimate criticism that we can put on the Israeli government. We're not saying we're angel. We also have our own grievances towards our government. But from this to where we are and were days after, like Bobby said, we were massacred, there's a big, big gap that I don't know how to bridge that gap, how to make it make sense. Yeah.
Donnie.
I think we should clarify that, a lot of the people who have been attacking us are disguising their anti-Semitism behind anti-Zionism. But we know, or I mean, I can only speak to him for myself, that, when someone calls me a Zio or a Zionist, that's really a stand-in for Jew, because an estimated 95% of Jewish people believe that Israel has a right to exist. I mean, Zionism is a right for Jewish self-determination in our ancestral homeland. Yet that word has somehow been transformed or bastardized. Now it means racism and colonialism. It doesn't mean any of these things that are being attached to it now. Yeah, my belief is that the vast majority of people who are anti that my belief is that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, because you're basically stating that Jews don't have a right to live in their ancestral homeland, where they've which they've inhabited for 3,000 years, except for certain expulsions, and that Israel is actually the most successful decolonization project in the history of the world. And to somehow suggest that Jewish people who are indigenous to the region, or Jews who have fled persecution, pogroms, post-war Europe, and have gone there, to suggesting that we don't have a right to be there, and those indigenous Jews who have been there for generations don't have a right to be there. It's just anti-Semitism, masked as something else.
Bobby.
Yeah, I totally agree with Donnie. I think that Israel is the new Jew when it comes to anti-Semitism. They just you say that they're attacking Israel instead, but we all know what that means. I think what made this feel different. I grew up in the 80s in Texas as a Jew. Like, I've seen anti-Semitism since I was a kid. What made this different is, for the first time, it was anti-Semitism was trending. It became the new thing to do. And you have people like Kanye with a Super Bowl commercial for his website, which is just a shirt with a giant swastika on it, HH1, and nobody's calling that out. No, nobody's saying anything about that, while at the same time calling Jews Nazis for defending their homeland and defending their people. It's gotten to where, as long as you have freedom of speech and people will listen, it's okay for you to say something, as long as you are either a victim or championing victimhood. And the victim is just who social media decides is the victim, and it's usually just the smaller group. And this is dangerous because these are easy answers. These are easy. And this correlates to something that I saw a lot in animal rights movement that was making me want to step out in the first place, was we use easy, lazy activism. We use shaming and ridicule as a way of saying that we're holding someone to account. It asks nothing of you to shame and ridicule someone. I don't need to know anything about Donnie to start ridiculing him right now. Nothing, right? The difficult part is having understanding and being able to create open discourse, validating people's experiences, because none of us were born vegan, but we don't want to do that, right? We just want the easy answer. We want the easy enemy. And I think that sort of moved into anti-Semitism, although I think anti-Semitism was already there.
Mira.
I forgot who had said it, kind of just that people aren't really thinking necessarily about what they're saying. They're kind of just jumping on the bandwagon. And I think in the case of anti-Semitism, it's definitely true in the movement and just in the larger world. People just have a fundamental misunderstanding or lack of understanding as to what anti-Semitism is and how it functions. People assume it's like every other bigotry, but instead of seeing Jews as less than, it's often kind of what they call like punching up, where like kind of like the evil puppeteers overseeing and controlling things. And it's almost like a copy and paste template. Throughout the years, whatever is cherished in society, we're the ones that are messing that up. So if social justice is, what's deemed very important in this time period, Jews are the ones getting in the way of that. When capitalism was important, Jews were the communists. When communism was important in certain regions, Jews were the capitalists. I mean, and people also don't understand, how the Soviet Union played a role in like literally the rhetoric we're talking about now. My grandmother would go undercover into the Soviet Union to help try to free Jewish political prisoners. And she would take photos of just, like what she was seeing in the area, just like to remember her trips. And I was looking at one of her photo albums, and there was propaganda like at a bookstore. And I read it and I was like, this is literally what we're seeing now. And it was like, I don't the gist of it, because I don't remember the details, was basically it was depicting Israel as Hitler, actually, like controlling and like grabbing, I think it was the US, And then at the bottom it says Zionism is Nazism. And like that's literally what we're seeing, and people just don't understand that like what they're saying is not only not a new original concept, like it's literally very old. And like those that understand how anti-Semitism has looked in the past are like, yeah, this makes sense. But people aren't really taking the time to look at that. So to them, it's how could it possibly be anti-Semitism? It doesn't look the same as other forms of discrimination, I guess.
Shani.
Just to continue what Mira was saying, I look at anti-Semitism as kind of like a virus. And it's funny that after COVID, people can now understand this analogy of a virus being mutated and changing. So yeah, it moved from hatred that is based on religion base with the Christianity and moved on to science, what we saw with the Nazism of like the race differences, etc. And in today's world, when the religion is social justice and liberation and everything that this movement is standing for, anti-Zionism, in air quote, just like Bobby said, is anti-Semitism. It's just another trope, it's just another version of anti-Semitism, and these people just cannot see it. And it's just important to understand that it's just like a virus who gets mutated. So Jew hatred through the centuries, through different times in our history. And this is just another version of it. And yeah, they think they're so original and so revolutionary, but it's just another form of Jew hatred.
Bobby.
I guess I have a, I guess a question that I want to pose to everybody, and that is like, I don't understand how and when it became socially acceptable to be anti-Semitic, but it is, and the proof, all the proof you need is you look at college campuses in the U.S. If there were protests stopping African Americans or LGBTQ groups from getting into class and terrorizing them, those would have been shut down immediately. They would have been shut down immediately. But because it was Jews that weren't being able to get to class, it was considered okay. It was considered, a freedom of speech or PC, which is just, fascism disguised as political correctness. And I just my question is like, does anyone have an answer for like why it became okay to be anti-Semitic when it's still not okay to be racist? It's not okay to be homophobic. It's not okay to be transphobic. But anti-Semitic is fine.
Donnie.
I mean, I could try to answer that question. I mean, at the beginning of this post 10/7 world, someone framed it to me like, a lot of people were jumping on the bandwagon with all of this anti-Semitic rhetoric under the guise of oppressor versus oppressed. And there was this perception that Jewish people are white, despite the fact that I believe that white Jews are in the minority in Israel. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but there are plenty of Israelis who are people of color from Ethiopia and other parts of the Middle East and Africa. And so I think they latched onto this sort of oppressor versus oppressed narrative, and that gave people a free pass to behave in to use such anti-Semitic language. I mean, we think in social justice movements, people criticize microaggressions. Not only are microaggressions against Jews not being addressed, full-blown attacks against us are now perfectly acceptable. And I just want to read, this is just one post made by a former DXE spokesperson. And DXE is an organization that I loved and supported financially and made video. I mean, I was really on board. And for them to not put a stop to stuff like this. So I'm going to read it. And this is, again, a former DXE spokesperson. On social media, potentially thousands of people or tens of thousands of people saw this. All Zionists are infiltrators when they operate within any other cause or movement. They would rather nuke the entire organization than allow it to take a stand against the genocidal ethnostate. Their ultimate solidarity is with white supremacy and fascism. But the Western left has allowed them to embed themselves within our ranks because we have been browbeaten into submission by claims of anti-Semitism made by those same infiltrators to silence us when we attempt to build intersectional multinational coalitions. This is especially sinister in the animal rights movement, a movement long co-opted by Zionists to humane wash their sinister and virulent ideology. Zionists cannot be animal rights activists. All Zionists are infiltrators within the animal rights movement, and their influence is a ticking time bomb. Their solidarity with your cause or organization is entirely contingent to your submission to their theocratic genocide, ethnic cleansing of the Middle East, and black hole drain on the American economy. All Zionist influence in progressive movements must be rooted out and destroyed by any means necessary. All Zionists are inherently infiltrators because their ultimate goal is the acceptance of Israel within progressivism, and they will never accept that the best tactic for progressive causes is to abandon Israel before we associate too closely with genocide. Their contributions, regardless, are made to obfuscate the reality that they are in fact murderously Islamophobic, and they use your deeply held beliefs to mask their bloodlust. Zionists dress up and mock progressive activists by even appearing at rallies and other events. This actually goes on, but just replace the word Zionist with Jew, which is exactly what this person meant, and which is exactly what 95% of Jews are. I mean, and this was, people like this and share it and comment it and thanked her for posting this. Where do you go from here as Jews in a movement?
Miriam?
So I've been living in Israel the last couple of years, and it has been difficult in the sense that not all the sanctuaries there have bomb shelters, and let alone for the animals. Like, it's just not possible, like, financially to build like a very small bomb shelter is like tens of thousands of dollars or shekels. I don't remember which currency it was, but just to create a small enough shelter to be able to continue to have staff and volunteers come and you know, make sure that the sanctuary is functioning for the residents. And I remember wanting to fundraise for some of them, especially when there were like way more rockets happening up north in Israel. And there's a sanctuary up there that, you know, the person running it just had to lay down in a field and pray that the rocket wasn't going to hit her. And I remember thinking, I need to fundraise, but who in the community can I actually share this fundraiser with? Because like, no one's going to want to share it, which is in fact very true. I mean, sanctuaries themselves and sanctuary founders have said disgusting things themselves. So it's not even like I could share it with fellow sanctuaries necessarily. And it was just this moment where I know it's been brought up before, the animals are suffering because of that. And like, I just had no idea who I could share the fundraiser with. And ended up being, I just shared it in the Jewish community and non-vegans were donating. And that's kind of the situation where it's been. And activists, you know, for example, in the US where I've done animal activism, just have no idea what it's like, you know, trying to help animals when you're worried about rockets and like, just, you know, I don't know, trying to document animal cruelty at a dairy farm and like driving up north where there's way more concentration of rockets at that point, and being like, you know, praying on the highway that you won't need to get out, lie on the side of the highway and cover your head and pray a rocket doesn't hit you because like there's no bomb shelter nearby, but you got to do to help the animals. And then there's, you know, people in the US kind of saying like, I hope the rocket hits you. Like, it just, it's not, it goes back to the question, like, I don't really know how you could reconcile this when even the animals that need the help so that volunteers continue to come and, you know, make sure their spaces are clean and that they're getting the exercise they need are not enough for these people to put whatever ideas they have aside and be like, okay, let's make that happen. I it's a very good question. I don't know, but it was very eye-opening.
Bobby.
I'll actually just let you go ahead and move on to the next question. I just wanted to add, not surprised at all that that comment came from DXE. Not surprised at all.
Well, I'm wondering now about DXE. What's the story behind that? Yes, Mira.
I will just say, just for the purpose of me talking about seeing anti-Semitism during COVID, they were the first ones that were on my radar. And ultimately, why I decided to try to start my own thing for Jews, just because even back during COVID, it started to seem like things were ramping up and kind of just being acceptable. But yeah, I think at this point, it's clearly not just them. You know, like we've said, other organizations have put out statements, and it's not just attendees, you know, it's organizers, and it's kind of widespread now. So yeah.
Yes, Donnie.
I want to make an observation about Mara was talking about being in Israel, that there's, I think, a lot of misunderstanding about the history of Israel and what Israel is. Israel, in the United Nations, there are 48 Muslim majority countries, and 23 of them have Islam declared as the quote state religion. Israel is the only country that identifies as Jewish. There's no official state religion, though. That's not, Jews live in peace with Arabs in Israel. There are 2 million 2 million Israeli citizens are Arab, and there are Christians and other many others in Israel. Yet there's this accusation that Israel is somehow an apartheid state, despite the fact that in all of these surrounding countries, Jews have been persecuted, chased out, and when they fled. So there's such a mis, you know, how Jew, how are How is Israel a colonial state? There's one country. Wouldn't these other religions or ethnicities that have conquered countries around the world be colonists? Why is this one Jewish state being accused of colonization? It doesn't make any sense. It's the ancestral homeland of the Jewish people. There's just, Israel's the size of New Jersey. It's a tiny state, and it's racially diverse, ethnically diverse, yet it's the center of the world's fury. And that double standard, to me, is just more proof that all of this hate stems from anti-Semitism. As Shani referred to in the past, you know, Jews used to be persecuted because we were Jewish. Now we're being persecuted because we have a state. They're always just looking for a reason. It's a shape-shifting virus looking for a reason to hate Jews. And now they're hiding behind the fact that Jews have a homeland, a state, but it's tiny. It's the size of New Jersey, and it seems like people won't, and including many animal rights activists, won't sit still until it's wiped off the face of the earth, from the river to the sea, in a global intifada, a violent uprising against Jews.
Bobby.
Yeah, I find it really interesting that, you know, because much of the animal rights and vegan community is on the left in terms of the political views, and they're progressive. Israel stands against everything they hate. Israel is the only place in the Middle East where you can be openly gay, openly trans. It's the only place that has freedom of speech, where you can protest against the government. All these things that they that this that these groups say that they hold, like that they stand up for, Israel's the only country in the Middle East that actually stands up for these things. And that just shows like how unwilling these people are to actually do any research, to actually do any, learn, to be educated in any way on what they're fighting against.
Or it shows the depth of hatred against Jews. They're willing to throw Israel under the bus, despite the fact that it represents all of these progressive principles. And just to add to that, Bobby, I mean, Israel is, you know, many people describe it as the vegan capital of the world. You know, my friends who live in Israel just say that the whole country has been sort of veganized. And maybe, you know, maybe Myra or Shani can speak to that more, but to then sit, to then accuse us of vegan washing or humane washing. I mean, it's all it gets spun around, but it's true. Israel is a center of animal rights advocacy and veganism, and all of these other progressive principles. Yet people in our community are siding with those who want to do away with all of these principles. Just doesn't make any sense. It's anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I actually produced a vegan travel show, and episode one was in Israel. And the vegan community there was, this was about 7 years ago, was incredible. And what I found was incredible was how accommodating even the IDF, the military, is for vegans in terms of like giving them vegan gear and vegan food. And it's just, where else do you find these values so prevalent and yet so vilified at the same time?
Well, Donnie, you said that anti-Zionism was anti-Semitism. What do you make, and that 95% of Jews, something like that, the overwhelming majority agrees with that. Well, what do you make of those vegan Jewish activists who take the side of being anti-Zionists? And I've heard some of that coming from, I noted his name, Alex Hirschhaft. I even read Peter Singer, writing things along those lines. What do you make of those Jewish vegans in the community?
Well, I don't, and first of all, there's a distinction to be made between criticizing Israel's policies, which is fair. I mean, it does feel like a double standard in light of horrible things that are happening in Sudan and Congo and all over the world, why the whole world has chosen to focus on Israel. Again, that just feels like a double standard and steeped in anti-Semitism. So I don't know if the individuals who you mentioned are truly believe that Israel doesn't have a right to exist, or if they were critiquing Israeli policy, disagreeing with Israelis' military operations, suggesting that they employ a different strategy. I don't know. But there are, of course, in any group, there are going to be people at the extreme, people who vote against their own interests, people who just want to jump on a bandwagon, people want to be accepted by the larger community. It would be easier for me to say right now that Zionism is terrorism, and Zionism is racism, and Zionism is colonialism, and get back to being the animal rights activist I was before, than it is to stand up for the truth and to stand up in principle. So there are always going to be people who on the fringe who are going to speak out and maybe take this alternative view. I don't know, maybe others have another explanation.
Well, at the very least, they were not vocal about the anti-Semitism that everyone on this call has been the victim of, in terms of denouncing it.
People are afraid. I just want to just interrupt. Yesterday, I watched the closing ceremony or the closing session of the Anti-Defamation League's annual summit at the Javits Center in New York. And one of the keynote speakers was David Schwimmer, the actor from Friends. And he said, look, it might be uncomfortable to speak out. I have been alienated and isolated and criticized and canceled in some circles for speaking out against anti-Semitism. But he encouraged people in Hollywood, people with a platform in the music industry, in the sports industry, and entertainment industry, to use their platforms to speak out, because people like us who aren't public figures need that solidarity. We need to see that. And we need people with huge platforms to correct the record, to go on record and say what's really happening here.
Bobby.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to cowardice. It's people are afraid of real activism, which is interesting, because activism that asks something of you, that asks you to step out on a limb, that asks you to put yourself in an unflattering light, I guess. And yeah, it's just that's really where I can come to a conclusion on, is it just People are scared of what someone might say about them online. Who cares? You know, like I get that people have social media followings that are like, you know, part of their income and things like that. But I mean, so someone says something negative about you online, some skinny tattooed punk vegan says something about you and you care? Who cares?
Shani?
I think not only what Bobby and Ryan said about being cowards and afraid to go against the stream, which the stream and the majority of the movement, the progressive movement and the vegan movement is anti-Zionist. And I say that because we all know it means anti-Semitism. Not only that, I think it's mostly the lack of understanding that Judaism is a Zionist movement. What I mean is that for thousands of years, 3,000 years, we are a people who speak the same language, believe in the same book, and pray for Zion. It's part of Judaism. So all these movement groups of Not In My Name or Jewish Voices for Peace and all these people who are in the costume of, oh, as a Jew, I don't stand for what Israel does. It's just they're using their Judaism to mask their self-hatred, because if you are a Jewish, you know that for, like I said, thousands of years, we've been speaking the same language and all of our prayers and all of our costumes and traditions are aimed towards Israel. All of our holidays, it all stems from the land and the land of Israel. So I think that lack of understanding that you cannot separate Judaism from Zionism is also a driving force of those minority fringe Jewish people who jump to say, Not In My Name. I think it makes them feel more virtuous, more, I am Jewish and I'm against that. So you can't say you're Jewish if you don't understand that basic, like the other name of Israel is Zion. So you cannot separate the two. If you separate the two, you misunderstand the fundamental meaning of being Jewish. So it's just ignorance and the need to be so virtuous above you. I'm so moral. That's the explanation that I get from that.
And ironically, I mean, I feel like displaying that level of hostility is just one more argument to have a Jewish state and an army to be able to defend yourself. Why is that issue the one that, you know, triggers vegans now? Why was it not, I don't know, how Turkey was taken over by basically a dictatorship and thousands of journalists were thrown in prison. Why was not maybe the persecution of the Uyghur people in China? You know, I could go down the list of horrid foreign tragedies, you know, human rights in Iran. The woman there, you know, not wearing a hijab and being sent to prison for like 8 years. Why is this not the cause that vegans have adopted? Why is it, you know, the Israeli conflict? And I guess a second follow-up question around that is why the vegan movement should anyway, you know, talk about those social issues. We're here for animals. We're here to stop the exploitation of animals. Why do we feel the need to disperse ourselves and talk about other social issues? Why are we not just solely focused on that very important issue that other groups, social groups, are not talking about. Bobby?
Yeah, I think that that's the negative side of intersectionalism. It's this idea that if I'm talking about veganism at a vegan event and not anything else, then I don't care about anything else other than veganism, right? There's a very small percentage of the human population that has dedicated their lives to the liberation of animals. And all this, all those other topics do is turn our attention to human-centric causes when we're taking the small time that we have to look at animals and help animals. And I think to your first question, yeah, when you look at like child soldiers in Africa or what's happening in the Congo or the Muslims in China that are being rounded up by the millions, all these things are, you know, what's happening in Turkey, what's happening in Syria, all these problems. And it's like people say, well, they care about these problems too. Well, I'm sorry, I don't see the same vitriol and hatred that I see towards Israel. And it's not a complicated answer. It's anti-Semitism. That's all it is. It's anti-Semitism and an easy target and an easy villain. It's like, oh, well, they're the problem. You know, because, you know, if you're talking about child soldiers, that's a complicated issue. In Africa, there's a lot going on. And like to understand that geopolitical landscape and people claiming that they understand the political landscape of the Middle East, which is ridiculous, you know, but they don't have to worry about that because they just have to say, oh, it's Jews. You know, so that's easy. I can get on this side. That's where I think that comes from.
Donnie?
You asked why the focus on Israel, as opposed to the Uyghurs, Sudan, Congo, places where there are actual genocides taking place. I mean, no Jews, no news. I think that's part of it. I think that this conflict has given people who are anti-Semitic a platform to spew anti-Semitic hate, but sort of hide behind a keffiyeh or the, you know, a mask of anti-Zionism. But it's anti-Semitism. Why have all of these large multinational animal rights organizations addressed only one geopolitical issue on their social media platforms, which have hundreds of thousands of followers? Why this and not all of these all other horrible things that are happening? And, you know, it comes down to anti-Semitism. Why did they choose to step out of their lane for this cause? And so, yeah, again, it all comes back in the end. It really does all come back to anti-Semitism.
Shani?
I just want to play a devil's advocate because that's what I do a lot. Like, I try to think like they think. Like, I try to think, what would they say to that? Like, why do you concentrate on Israel so much? And I want to ask the group, what would you say to the people who say, well, in Sudan and Congo and all of these places, US don't play a major role in being ally, like they're ally to Israel, and these people who are protesting and like are so vocal about Israel and what's happening in the Israeli Gaza war. What would you say to those people who say, well, the US government don't fund Congo, they don't fund these places, this is the one conflict that they can put an impact on because this, like, this is their country. Like, if it's protesters from the US, let's say, or Canada or UK, these are places who actively and financially support in Israel and are allies, and that is their reason why they concentrate on this conflict, because this is the one conflict that they can impact on with protesting. What would you say to these people? I'd like to hear what that group say, because this is an answer that I can hear a pro-Palestinian activist say, well, we can't control this, but we can control that. What would you say to those people?
Mira?
I would say, ironically, for at least some part of the war, the U.S. was actually in some way funding both sides. So I don't see that really being addressed, whether it's the resources that Hamas was getting through Iran or aid that ended up in Hamas's hands that was then used, whether that's like fuel for rockets or whatever. It's not as clear cut as people might assume that like Israel is the only one, whether it's directly or indirectly being supported by the US, at least at some point, you know, like in 2023. And so, yeah, I mean, if you really want to talk about, like, if someone as an American wants to talk about their country's involvement in this, at least talk about what's happening, that both sides were getting some help, again, whether indirectly or directly, from the US.
That's a great point. Thank you for that.
Bobby.
Israel offers more aid to Gaza than any other country in the world. This is a country that's basically at war with another country, and while at the same time being expected to make sure that country is safe, make sure that they have food and water and fuel, and defend yourself. But you know, don't when you do that, don't hurt any of them. You know, it's this weird double standard that no other country is a standard no other country has ever been held to. It's ridiculous. And I think that just becomes it comes from a place where facts don't matter anymore. You know, you can look at objective truth right in the face and they'll just turn the other way because it doesn't align with their narrative. It doesn't align with whatever is holding up their fragile little world that they've built, so it makes them comfortable. And I think the problem is that people aren't honest with themselves. People are, oh, I know what's happening over there. No, you don't. You don't know. Are you kidding? Oh, I'm going to stop America from aiding. No one out there on a protest on the street has the influence to change what America or Israel is going to do in this situation. They just want to be a virtue signaling loudmouth, patting themselves on the back as like, I'm the moral compass for everybody here. That's what I mean, that we see that in all activism. It's really unfortunate, and I don't know how we can get back to people being willing to say, I don't know enough about this to have an opinion. You know, you don't hear that anymore.
Donnie.
I think the objection that Shaney raises that, oh well, we're out on the streets because we fund the US funds Israel. I think it's a I think that those who do use that argument, for most of them, I believe that it's a smokescreen. First of all, I don't believe that most people who are taking to the streets calling for a global intifada and river to the sea, they don't know which river and which sea. I don't think they would even be aware of the fact that Israel supports Israel but doesn't support some of these other countries where atrocities are taking place. I think that would be giving a lot of these activists too much credit. But I will say also that I think for most people are followers, and they're jumping on, even if their participation isn't rooted in anti-Semitism, it's rooted by a desire to be part of the issue du jour, or to be part of a community, or to get off of social media and get into the streets with people. There are many different reasons why people have joined this Free Palestine, really anti-Israel movement. There are other examples that I can think of in recent history where people just jumped on something that they knew nothing about, and it became this trend. And I don't know if anybody here remembers, but there was a sort of a military leader in Uganda named Kony, who was rounding up children and turning them into soldiers. And there was all kinds of footage of these children with, you know, rifles, and it really disturbing. And it became this trend that everybody, this was probably right at the sort of dawn of social media, just jumped on this, let we've got to track down Kony, this military leader. It just became a thing in that moment, and then it left. And of course, my hope is that this will eventually subside too, and that sort of this anti-Semitic vitriol and hate will go away.
And I guess that's my, you know, closing question for you. How do you think, or how do you feel about the future of the vegan movement, of animal rights, as it has displayed this level of, I would say, stupidity if we think about it strategically and politically? You know, why did we get into this? Why did we create such division? This has not helped the movement at all. This has not saved any animal lives. So How do you think about the future, and do you have the same hope as Donny? You have expressed that this anti-Semitism, you know, will, this wave of anti-Semitism will, you know, go away, and maybe with peace in the Middle East, and we can at last be a more unified vegan movement. Bobby?
Yeah, I think the problem is that once vegan activists started becoming celebrities, it became an egoic movement where people weren't interested in facts, when people weren't interested in effective communication and effective activism, they were interested in loud activism. It was about, you know, get your voice, be loud, instead of be effective. And I think that it's going to be trending that way. I don't know what's going to happen with the animal rights movement, but at the same time, I don't excuse them for this, because they use that way too often to avoid accountability. A group will do something wrong and then say, well, if you attack us, you know, then you're attacking this group that's doing all this good for animals. Well, I'm sorry, that was your mistake. You know, we can't just say, well, we can't attack vegan or animal rights organizations because they're doing all this good work, and they are doing good work for animals. Right. But that's not a shield. It's a real hypocritical, disgusting shield that they hold out in front of them so that they can say, well, yeah, so we said that. So what? You know, you can't do it. What, are you going to publicly shame us and hurt our funding and hurt our work? It became all these different groups being the veganist vegan group instead of all of us working together on the same cause, which we were, was what we started out as. But now it's too self-interested. And I don't know what's going to happen. But I think that the ego needs to go away. You know, we've all heard that change starts with, you know, first there's awareness, then conversation, then change. We've been doing awareness for 80 years. We've been doing a yelling and screaming at people's faces so they can hear us since 1940, when the word vegan first showed up. The world is, what, 1% vegan? I think everyone here is smart enough to realize maybe that approach isn't working anymore. Maybe it's time to move to conversation. But that's the hard part that not everybody can be involved in. And that doesn't get likes on Instagram. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, in the introduction, I talked about a breaking point, and I can't help but feel like this, you know, this rise of anti-Semitism, this division, is a symptom of something else, maybe a transformation in this movement, more than, you know, the central thing. So, yeah, anyone else want to jump in? Mira?
It's interesting you said a symptom of a larger problem, because there is that, like, that phrase that's often attributed to anti-Semitism, especially when it exponentially grows in a society or a specific country, that it's the canary in the coal mine, which I don't know if it's technically speciesist, because, you know, canaries were used in the coal mine to see if, you know, if they died, then there's a sign that something's not safe down there, which obviously is horrible. But that kind of, you know, countries that devolved into just rampant anti-Semitism ended up having larger issues than just anti-Semitism, and that their society was kind of rotting. So just to your point, it has historically shown that way, that we're kind of like the first line of defense that something's wrong. I personally, because of the anti-Semitism I experienced, it has, for better or for worse, allowed me to see that there are issues in my own community that I can address. Whether or not that will be easy is a separate question. But in a way, I feel like if I'm willing to do it, and I, you know, have the knowledge, since it is my community, I have more knowledge than someone that's, let's say, outside the Jewish community. You know, hopefully I can use that to my advantage and kind of, like I said, like fill in gaps that I'm seeing. I'm in the process of trying to launch an organization that will be based in Israel, but then kind of spread out to Jewish communities around the world, because there are decisions, especially like in Israel, there was a decision to make certain methods when slaughtering animals illegal, and then that spread to a big kosher certification organization that's based in diaspora, like around the world, and then they implemented that into their organization as well. They won't certify animal bodies that I guess were killed with that method. So it does have a ripple effect, and I'm just, the aim for that is to kind of take like a macro look at the movement in Israel as a whole and see kind of what approaches are maybe not implemented as much and assist in making in kind of plugging in the holes and creating like a unifying message in the community and allowing for more collaboration. So it kind of can be more cohesive and yeah, kind of just looking at where I can help. So that is my plan, to still stick more within the spaces I'm already in as a Jew. Because yeah, I think what better way to make an impact than the communities I'm already in, I guess.
Donnie.
So I would say over the past, since 10/7, I've spent way more time than I want addressing anti-Semitism because I felt like I absolutely have to. It'd be irresponsible not to. And I've done that at the expense of time that I would have normally spent advocating for animals. And that's a shame. And I really look forward to a time when that ends because my heart is in this movement. My heart is in animal rights. And as Bobby said earlier on, how I am an activist will change or and already has changed. But I'll always be here for the animals because that's where my heart is. That's where my passion is.
Bobby.
Yeah, I think that I'm guessing that almost every Jewish vegan animal rights activist had the same experience where, I spent the last 10 years working with people like Sean Monson and Moby, going inside slaughterhouses, going undercover into factory farms, literally being at a slaughterhouse 3 times a week, every week for 6 years, to the point where I was in a mental health clinic for 12 weeks. And I was known for that. Like, that's who I was. I was the guy who was organizing all the vigils and the guy who was, cinematographer for Sean Monson and doing all this frontline activism, rescuing over 100 and something animals. And all of that went away on October 8th, and I became a Jewish vegan. And I became a vegan who couldn't work with groups I was working with groups where it was my dream to work with them. Activists and artists who I was like so excited to finally be working with. And then they started posting things, and I was in good conscience, couldn't continue working for that organization. And so now here I am in Austin. I'm not in LA anymore, and struggling with a real identity crisis on what I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to, and how's that going to look? What is that going to look like? Because even though it was detrimental to my health, if someone said, "Hey, we need you to go and film inside a slaughterhouse right now," I would do it in a heartbeat, because that's where my passion lies. Right? But I can't in good conscience promote groups that promote hate. And so I feel completely it's like in a spy movie where the main character realizes they've been double-crossed, and what they thought was friendly ground is now enemy territory, and they don't know what to do or who to trust or where to go. And that's where I am right now. And I think that there's a lot of Jewish vegan activists that are feeling like that.
Shani, did you want to add something or?
I didn't, because my view on it is really pessimistic. So I don't know where we go from here. And I'm so connected to what Ryan just said. I, as a Jewish animal activist, I just feel homeless right now. I feel like almost the need of like reinventing ourselves in that space. Which is just hurting the movement, because like I said at the beginning, like our power is in numbers. Like, the more we grow as a movement, the more it becomes more mainstream, the more veganism lifestyle and the liberation of animals is on the table, the more people join in. We want to get to a point of critical mass. We all know that term of like when it becomes like a bit more common you're last looked upon as weird or fringe. And this divisiveness in our movement just hurting our movement, and it's just I don't know if we can ever recover from that, because Ryan just said, like, you feel like in your own movement you don't know who to trust, you don't know who's I can't see myself going back to the community here, almost to a point where I have like serious thoughts of going back to Israel, because I feel so alienated in Vancouver as a large and the vegan movement especially. So I didn't want to say anything because I'm pretty pessimistic about what's the future of that look like, but one can only hope that we will find those spaces to keep advocating for animal rights and the liberation of animals from our plates, from our culture, clothing, whatever, all the implications of that. But right now, I don't see the way out. I don't see how this becoming, how this goes away. I wish I had better answers, but yeah.
Donnie.
This is a little bit out of place, but one of the things that has struck me, and over the past year and however long it's been since 10/7, is that our colleagues in the movement have been sort of attacking Israel and attacking us under the guise of Free Palestine. But I've never heard anyone in the movement state the obvious, that if they really genuinely cared about the plight of people living in Gaza, why aren't they calling to free Palestine from Hamas, which strips people of their human rights, which uses their citizens as human shields, which reigns with terror? It's hard to even take their approach and their point of view seriously when they're not even stating the obvious, that if they believe that the people living in Gaza are victims, who are they victims of? Israel wants nothing more than to live in peace with their neighbors. But their neighbor, the leadership of their neighbors, and many just plain old civilians, state openly, proudly, publicly that they're desire is to wipe Israel and Jews off the face of the earth. As Golda Meir once famously stated, how do you negotiate with people who have come to kill you? And there's just ne never any discussion about that in our movement. And so it just reaffirms this feeling that I have, that all of this Free Palestine activism is rooted in hate against Israel and Jews. More than a desire to actually help the people who they're claiming to advocate for.
Bobby.
Yeah, I completely agree. I try to make this comparison when I'm talking to people. It would be like the KKK starting an uprising in, I don't know, Mississippi or wherever, West Virginia, and then asking all the African Americans and Jews, why can't you guys just, figure this out, get along? When it says in Hezbollah's basically charter and on their flag that we are here to destroy Israel and to destroy Jews, when Hamas says we are here to destroy Israel and destroy Jews, and then you say, well, they're a political party, why can't you guys just get along? You wouldn't say that if it was someone in a Klan outfit coming on the news and spouting out hate, and you go, oh, that's a political party. This is ridiculous.
Yes, Tony.
On October 7th and October 8th, when the video footage of the hostages that recorded by Hamas and civilians who participated in that attack, when we started to see that, what we saw is thousands of civilians in Gaza and Hamas taking to the streets cheering over the bodies of dead and bloodied people who were in Israel, whether they were Israelis or visitors in Israel, just the people who were taken hostage. You just would never see anything like that on the other side of the border in Israel. And so, for me as a Jewish person, I don't know what the way forward is for Israel. How do people in this country, the peace-loving kibbutzniks who lived on the border with Gaza, who are transporting people from Gaza into Israel for medical treatment at Israeli hospitals, who are then victims of Hamas and who are still being held captive by Hamas, how do they go on? And so I want to be here as an American, as a Jew, and as an animal rights activist to say that, I support them and will continue to advocate for them until this nightmare is over, one way or another.
Bobby?
Yeah, I think that one thing that was so telling for me was on October 8th, when all these videos are coming out, this goes to my point to where people just make up their own reality. People were saying, oh, well, that didn't really happen. I was like, it did happen. And that's Hamas showing you and bragging about it that it happened. And they're like, no, it's all fake. What are you supposed to say when if you're having a conversation with someone and all they do is bark no at you? They don't have anything to back up their beliefs other than hate. And so it's like, Jews are good people. No, they're not. Why not? Because they're not. Okay, I guess this conversation's over. Because they're just not willing to believe it. And so that's where my people call it pessimism, I call it realism, comes into. I don't know, because this speaks to a larger problem in terms of a lot of other groups and a lot of other issues where people just say, that's just not true. The earth is flat. How do you know? I just know. I just feel like that's true. Oh, okay. I guess that's good enough then.
Yeah, it's a form of negationism, like Holocaust denial. Shani?
Just to what just Ryan just said, on one hand, there's this like blatant denial of what happened on October 7, but then on the other hand, they praise what happened on October 7 and said it was a great act of resistance. So which one is it? Because they just keep contradicting themselves all the time, which is funny for someone who knows exactly what is happening to see it from the side. It's like, so which one is it? Did it happen or did it not happen? Just another point of like, you guys have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I feel like, creating this podcast and really, diving deep into the world of vegan activism, I have found that this division exists with many other groups, not as strong, as with Jewish vegans, the level of hostility and all of that, what we've have covered in the past hour. But you talk with vegans who label themselves as conservatives, and they will tell you, I don't feel welcome in this community, or vegans who are Christians, and they will tell you, hey, my way of doing veganism is not what is represented usually in the community as a general rule. I did the whole episode debunking the documentary Christpiracy, presenting the perspective of Christians on that documentary, but things like that it again, I go back to that point of this being a symptom of something else that is wrong in this movement. Bobby?
Yeah, and to your point with like conservatives, that has been a problem that has been bothering me ever since I became a vegan, is that they don't want to leave the echo chamber. Like I said, they want it to be easy activism. They're like, no, we don't want people who think differently than us. What are you talking about? Of course you want people who think differently than you. It's not doing us any good just preaching to the choir. But they're unwilling to do it because they say, oh, it's again that binary view of the world. Oh, conservative bad, non-vegan bad. And it's this unwilling to see the complexity in things and this idea that a conservative would never be vegan is ridiculous. My father's conservative, he's vegan. Again, I think it just comes down to lazy, easy activism, where they're not really confronted that much by opposing views. And if they are, all that they do is scream and shout as loud as they can. And they think that they sort of had some sort of impact. I think until we can get over that, until we can get over ourselves and not make it about how angry we are, and instead make it about how effective we can be, I think we're going to be in a stalemate for a while.
I will put an end to this conversation because, I want to respect your time. And let me just say, this has been an honor talking with you. Thank you so much for having shared, your insights and your experience. I really hope that this podcast makes some small difference in showing a different perspective to, again, those activists who are in this echo chamber and, are not seeing the light anymore, are bombarded with the same messaging. I do think that there are plenty of vegans, and I've talked with some of them who are silently supportive of the Jewish cause and are really not happy about what has happened in the past year with anti-Semitism. But again, I would have expected that a movement like veganism, which is highly non-conformist, would be more likely to speak up about those issues, have the courage to do so. But yeah, thank you so much. I'm really happy to have done this. Any parting words?
I just wanted to say thank you for creating that space, creating this conversation, because I don't think there's anything that the movement is facing right now that is more important than that. Because just like Mira said, this is just the canary in the coal mine. And this is just the beginning of the erosion, if you look at the history. So thank you for addressing it. Thank you for having me, having us, having this conversation. It is super important to me. And I love everything that everyone said. I'm connected deeply to the arguments and the examples that everyone has just shared. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for creating space for this conversation.
Thank you, Shani. Donnie?
By virtue of giving us a platform to talk about this issue, something which we have desperately needed, you're going to be subjecting yourself to criticism. So I just want to thank you for going out on a limb for us, for the Jewish community, and for giving us this platform to talk about what we've experienced and how we're feeling.
Thank you, Donnie. Mira?
I very much second what Donnie said. Thank you so much for reaching out and for, wanting to have this conversation in the first place and making it, I guess, a discussion with, more than just one Jew, to kind of see that there are multiple Jewish voices that are on the same page. And I really hope that you won't be, I guess, on the receiving end of too much hate, which sometimes does come along with, I guess, going against the grain regarding things around the Jewish community and Israel. So yeah, just thank you so much.
Thank you, Mira. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.
I just want to say sorry, but the way that the Zoom was show to me, I kept calling Bobby Ryan, so I just realized that. So if that confused anyone, the names just didn't show up properly. So technical thing, but sorry, Bobby, for misnaming you the whole time.